Well, good morning and a welcome out to everyone this morning. It is good to be with you this morning, and what a cold, dreary day it is outside, but it is nice to have a nice warm place to spend inside today. And I have a little something different planned today. I hope you don't mind that. I have some special singing, some congregational songs, and I even have a story for the children mixed in here as well. So I wanted to look at the story of Christ, the birth of Christ, a little bit. I think it's a very remarkable story. And, you know, everything around the birth of Christ was remarkable, from conception to how they ended up in Bethlehem to the prophecies that surrounded it. And I think it's a story worth telling. You know, there's debate about whether Christmas is the day of Christ's birth, and it's, to be honest, it's probably quite unlikely that it was the exact day that we celebrated. But I think it's helpful to celebrate Christ's birth and to remember the miracle that it was of Christ coming to this earth. The Bible doesn't give us an exact date, and so I think if it was important, he would have. I would imagine Mary would have known the exact date, would have remembered the exact date he was born, and she could have communicated that with one of the disciples, as it seemed they had a relationship with each other, and so you would think that could have happened. Why it was chosen, I don't know exactly. There are some, I was surprised, there's actually a lot of conflict, an opinion about why the 25th of December was chosen. The most common belief is that there were two pagan Roman holidays around the middle to end of December, and as Christianity became more widespread in the Roman Empire, they wanted to, I guess, repurpose those holidays, or instead of having those holidays, remind people of the story of Christ instead. So that's what is most oftentimes believed to be. I did find it was interesting. They said that the early church especially liked to compare Jesus with the light of the world. You read early church writings, and it was a lot of comparison of Jesus as light. And so there's belief that maybe it was chosen because it was the end of the winter solstice, when the days become longer, the nights start getting shorter, and it was a symbolic time. There's others that argue it was based on a calculation. I'd never heard this before. I guess I don't know where it comes from, but they said some of the early church believers felt that Jesus was conceived on the day that he would ultimately die, which was that year. It was March 25th, and so 9 months later would have been December 25th. Again, it's not something that I put much thought into. It's interesting to think about, but I don't think that the historical date is all that important. But we do have several accounts in Scripture, vivid details of what took place that night. Numerous scriptures that prophesied the exact place and circumstances surrounding his birth. And I would like to start by reading the portion in John. If you'd like to turn with me to John chapter 1, verse 1. But before that, I would like to have us sing our first song. And Brother Tim has agreed to lead some singing for me today. The song I chosen to sing, and this is, as soon as Evan gave his first song this morning, I was like, well, I should have communicated with him which songs I had selected. And then I was looking through the book and trying to figure out if there's any other songs, but I couldn't find one that I liked better than this for this occasion. So the song we're going to sing is 227 in the Songs of the Church. It is What Child Is This? So it's kind of a rookie mistake on my part to plan songs but not communicate that with the song leader, but it's one of my favorite Christmas songs, and I think it's worth singing again. So you can come on up and lead that song for us. Thank you.
All right, that's 227.
No love.
Thank you for leading that song for us. Turning now to John 1, chapter 1. In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. The same was in the beginning with God. All things were made by Him, and without Him was not anything made that was made. In Him was life, and the life was the light of men. And the light shineth in darkness, and the darkness comprehended it not. There was a man sent from God whose name was John. The same came to bear witness of the light, that all men through him might believe. He was not that light, but was sent to bear witness of that light. That was the true light, which lighteth every man that cometh into the world. He was in the world, and the world was made by him, and the world knew him not. He came unto his own, and his own received him not. But as many as received him, to them gave he the power to become the sons of God, even to them that believe on his name, which were born not of blood, nor of flesh, nor of the will of man, but of God. And the Word was made flesh, and dwelt among us, and we beheld his glory, and the glory of the only begotten Father, full of grace and truth. John bare witness of him, and cried, saying, This is he whom I spake, he that cometh after me, is preferred before me, for he was before me. You know, John has such a good way with words. I love his description here of Jesus. The Word, as is written here, refers to Jesus Christ. And if we reread that and we replace Word with Son, to me it makes a little bit more sense. It starts to open up the picture a little bit, and I just want to reread verse 1 by replacing that in the beginning was the Son, and the Son was with God, and the Son was God. And like I said, it's a beautiful picture that John paints here, and reading it that way kind of helps bring a little bit more light to it for me. But in these verses, John points out that Jesus was there from the very beginning. Jesus' story is not one that begins at Christmas, but that begins at creation. Verse 10, he says, He was in the world, and the world was made by him, and the world knew him not. As I was preparing for this message, it's a several-week process for me where I begin meditating on what I want to preach about. And a few days ago, I was on the floor playing with my four-month-old son as I was thinking about this. And I had some beads that I was kind of waving over above him, and he was trying to grab them. And he's right now just learning some coordination. He is not very good with his hands yet. And he would focus with every sense in his body to grab those beads and find, and you could see his everything is focused in on this. And finally he would grab a finger around it and try to pull it down to his mouth, and it would slip, and And he'd start over again. And as I was watching him, I was thinking, the Son, Jesus Christ, who was there at creation, who was beside the Father as he was molding Adam, as he was forming every little detail, his hands, his fingers. He subjected himself to being a baby, to being completely unable to control those very functions that he helped create. You know, he saw the absolute worst in humanity. He saw it with his very eyes, and he came into the world as a tiny baby, completely dependent on the broken humans that he came to save. And I wondered, as I thought about it, do you think he was bullied by children growing up, as almost every child is at some point? Do you think in the carpenter shop he smashed his finger a few times when he was helping his dad? Do you think during puberty he found himself confused and trying to find his identity? Verse 14 says, he was made flesh and he dwelt among us. Sometimes I think it's something that I struggle to grasp. And I feel like I hardly appreciate it enough that the maker of the world chose to live in the very world that was corrupted by Satan because it was the only way that he could save it. John the Baptist says in verse 15, He that cometh after is preferred before me, for he was before me. You know, John, even though he was the older cousin, he knew that Jesus was there before him. So how did everybody else miss it? You know, one of my favorite parts about the creation story is the prophecies that preceded it. And we have the benefit of hindsight today, and we can look and we can say, well, yeah, this all fits in. And how did the people that were so familiar with the scriptures, the most familiar with it, how did they understand, how did they miss so many signs? But like I said, we sort of have the benefit of hindsight, and we can't judge them. Maybe we can't judge them for that, at least not too harshly. But talking about the prophecies, Isaiah 9 is one of my favorite chapters in those prophecies about the Messiah. I'm going to read two verses in verse 6 and 7 of Isaiah 9. He says, for unto us a child is born, unto us a son is given, and the government shall be upon his shoulder, and his name shall be called Wonderful, Counselor, the Mighty God, the Everlasting Father, the Prince of Peace. Of the increase of his government and peace there shall be no end, upon the throne of David and upon his kingdom, to order it and to establish it with judgment and justice from henceforth even forever. The zeal of the Lord of hosts will perform this. Sometimes wonder how it was understood by the people of that time when they read that prophecy. You know, the Messiah was to come as a baby. He was supposed to be born as a baby, and yet he would reign forever. He was to become flesh and yet be immortal at the same time. How did that make any sense? But there's also a clue in Micah where he would be born when he places the birthplace of the baby in Bethlehem. And you know, one would think during the census there would have been a heightened awareness of the prophecies of the promised Messiah. You know, surely at that time, with so many people forced into a little town, they would have been very inconvenient. It would have reminded people of maybe the unreasonableness of the Romans that were ruling over them at that time. And you would think that perhaps the promised Messiah would have been on everybody's mind at that time. And, you know, I also think about, and I was going to mention this earlier, one of the reasons that many scholars believe that Jesus' birth was not in December is because December was typically a damp and a cold month, and it wouldn't have been a good time for the shepherds to be out in the fields with their sheep at night. But there's also the view that, well, perhaps they were forced out of their stables because those were needed for people to be staying in. We don't know. We don't know why the shepherds were in the fields, but I think maybe it was because there were so many people in town. So you would think, over that time especially, that more people would have They would have been thinking about, this is the birthplace of Jesus. This is very inconvenient. The Roman rulers are here. They're being very unreasonable. But as I said, a lot of people missed it. And I'm going to just leave that thought hanging for a little bit. I have a group coming up to sing us a song, and I want to welcome them up now. This is Alfredo's group. So if y'all want to head on up, I think they have a song for us, and I'm going to let them sing that before I get into the next section. So come on up, however many of you are in that group.
So we've chosen to sing O Come, O Come, Emmanuel, and it's a song that has a kind of a dark theme to it, but it's a longing for a future fulfillment, and that's what I've come to take personally for myself. Is there's a deep longing inside me, and the only fulfillment that I can truly find is in Christ. And that's what this song talks about with monks and Christians before Jesus came as a child. They were singing this song, waiting for the promised Messiah.
Shall come to thee,
Thank you all for that song. That song almost gives me the goosebumps listening to it, especially as you all sang it. That was beautiful. As I mentioned earlier, the shepherds may not have been spending the night in the fields because it was a beautiful night and they wanted to be out there. Might have been because they had to. The other thing I think about with animals, when there's a lot of people and limited resources, animals are the ones that suffer before the people, generally speaking. And people may have been camping out in their favorite grazing land. The water tables may have been under pressure because of all the extra people that were in town. It was to the shepherds whom the news was first given. Luke 2 tells us the story, and I want to read the four verses there from 10 to 14 in Luke 2. And the angels said unto them, "Fear not, for behold, I bring you good tidings of great joy, which shall be to all people. For unto you is born this day in the city of David a Savior, which is Christ the Lord. And you shall see this sign, and this shall be a sign unto you. You shall find the babe wrapped in swaddling clothes, lying in a manger." And suddenly there was with the angel a multitude of heavenly hosts praising God and saying, "Glory to God on the highest, and on earth peace, goodwill toward men." And I think the shepherd scene at the Night of Light does a great job in capturing the wonder of the moment. The shepherds were just having a normal day outside. We don't know if it was in December. It was probably a miserable day outside, but it may have been in the spring or in the fall, and it may have been nice. They may have been having a good day. But whatever the case, they were suddenly interrupted by the most wonderful news. And the next song I've chosen, I feel like captures that very well. "Hark, the herald angels sing." And I'd ask Anita to get a group together for this, and I think she turned out sick, but she's said there are some people that are able to sing for us today. So I want to welcome them on up here at this time and sing us that song. And as they're coming up, I'll just share this little story. I don't know if you know what herald means. This morning, of all mornings, we were listening to some Christmas music before church. And my five-year-old asked me, she said, "What does herald mean?" And I said, I think it's like something to do with news, but I'm not sure exactly what it is. I don't know how y'all did it without Google, but I was like, well, I'm going to have to figure this out. And it means herald is one who brings important news. So it's like the courier, but specifically important news. So be thinking about that as you hear this song.
To the new. winging his wings. Mild delays his glory by, born that man no more may die, born to raise the sons of earth, born to give him second birth. Hark, their old angels sing, glory to the newborn King.
Thank you for sharing in that way. That was beautiful. You imagine the shepherds' excitement as they heard that news. You imagine running alongside of them across the rocky ground in the middle of the night, searching eagerly to find where this baby lay, and then finding him among the animals in a feed trough, of all places. That was no place for a king. Jesus came from a place of unimaginable luxury. We can't even imagine what kind of home he has. It's that nothing on earth compares. But he could have chosen a little bit nicer place than a dirty old stable or a cave or wherever it was. You know, the Roman Empire was very advanced civilization for its time, and you would think there would have been at least some place where he could have been born, surrounded by nurses and worshipped by princes. Instead, he chose a manger where he'd be visited by shepherds, the most humble of people. And I promised a story for the children, and I'd like to have the children come up now for that. If y'all want to just come and sit up in the front bench and ask Stephanie if she would read the story. She said, well, it depends on if Max is going to allow it. Do you think you can? Or okay. All right, so come on up. And she's going to bring up the book and read you a little story.
Once upon a time, in a sunny valley, there lived a little lamb named Joshua. He was white, with black spots, black feet, and sad eyes. Josh felt sad when he saw the other lambs with snow-white wool and no spots. He felt sad when he saw the other sheep with their moms and dads, because he didn't have a mom or a dad. But he felt saddest when he saw the other lambs running and jumping, because he couldn't. Josh had been born with one leg that didn't work right. He was crippled. He always limped when he walked. That's why he always watched while the other lambs ran and played. Josh felt sad and alone, except when Abigail was around. Abigail was Josh's best friend. She didn't look like a friend for a lamb. She was an old cow. She was brown with white blotches that looked like rain puddles on a path. Her belly was round as a barrel, and her voice was always kind and friendly. Some of Josh's favorite hours were spent with Abigail. They loved to pretend they were on adventures in distant islands.
Be quiet so they can hear the story, okay?
Josh liked to listen to Abigail tell stories about the stars. They would spend hours on the hill looking into the valley. They were good friends. Even with a friend like Abigail, Josh still got sad. It made him sad to be the only lamb who could not run and jump and play in the grass. That's when Abigail would turn to him and say, "Don't be sad, little Joshua. God has a special place for those who feel left out." Josh wanted to believe her, but it was hard. Some days he just felt alone. He really felt alone the day the shepherds decided to take the lambs to the next valley where there was more grass. The sheep had been in this valley so long, the ground was nearly bare. All the sheep were excited when the shepherd told them they were going to a new meadow. As they prepared to leave, Josh hobbled over and took his place on the edge of the group, but the others started laughing at him. "You're too slow to go all the way to the next valley." "Go back, Slowpoke. We'll never get there if we have to wait on you. Go back, Joshua." That's when Josh looked up and saw the shepherd standing in front of him. "They are right, my little Joshua. You better go back. This trip is too long for you. Go and spend the night in the stable." Josh looked at the man for a long time. Then he turned slowly and began limping away. When Josh got to the top of the hill, he looked down and saw all the other sheep headed toward the green grass. Never before had he felt so left out. A big tear slipped out of his eye, rolled down his nose, and fell on a rock. Just then he heard Abigail behind him, and Abigail said what she always said when Josh felt sad. "Don't be sad, little Joshua. God has a special place for those who feel left out." Slowly the two friends turned and walked to the stable together. By the time they got to the little barn, the sun was setting like a big orange ball. Josh and Abigail went inside and began to eat some hay out of the feed box. They were very hungry, and the hay tasted good. For a little while, Joshua forgot that he had been left behind. "Go to sleep, little friend," Abigail said after they finished eating. "You've had a hard day." Josh was tired, so he lay down in the corner on some straw and closed his eyes. He felt Abigail lay down beside him, and he was glad to have Abigail as a friend. Soon Josh was asleep. At first he slept soundly, curled up against Abigail's back. In his sleep he dreamed. He dreamed of running and jumping like the other sheep. He dreamed of long walks with Abigail through the valley. He dreamed of being in a place where he never felt left out. Suddenly strange noises woke him up. "Abigail," he whispered, "wake up, I'm scared." Abigail lifted her big head and looked around. The stable was dark except for a small lamp hanging on the wall. "Somebody is in here," Josh whispered. They looked across the dimly lighted stable. There, lying on some fresh hay in the feed box, was a baby. A young woman was resting on a big pile of hay beside the feed box. Joshua looked at Abigail, thinking his friend could tell him what was going on. But Abigail was just as surprised as Josh. Josh looked again at the woman and the child, then limped across the stable. He stopped next to the mother and looked into the baby's face. The baby was crying. He was cold. The woman picked up the baby and put him on the hay next to her. Josh looked around the stable for something to keep the baby warm. Usually there were blankets, but not tonight. The shepherds had taken them on their trip across the valley. Then Josh remembered his own soft, warm wool. Timidly, he walked over and curled up close to the baby. "Thank you, little lamb," the baby's mother said softly. Soon the little child stopped crying and went back to sleep. About that time, a man entered the stable carrying some rags. "I'm sorry, Mary," he explained. "This is all the cover I could find." "It's okay," she answered. "This little lamb has kept the new king warm." "A king?" Joshua looked at the baby and wondered who he might be. "His name is Jesus," Mary spoke, as if she knew Josh's question. "God's son. He came from heaven to teach us about God." Just then there was another noise at the door. It was the shepherds, the ones who had left Joshua behind. Their eyes were big and they were excited. "We saw a bright light and heard the angels," they began. Then they saw Joshua next to the baby. "Joshua, do you know who this baby is?" "He does now." It was the young mother who was speaking. She looked at Joshua and smiled. "God has heard your prayers, little lamb. This little baby is the answer." Joshua looked down at the baby. Somehow he knew this was a special child, and this was a special moment. He also understood why he had been born with a crippled leg. Had he been born like the other sheep, he would have been in the valley. But since he was different, he was in the stable, among the first to welcome Jesus into the world. He turned and walked back to Abigail and took his place beside his friend. "You were right," he told her. "God does have a special place for me."
That's it. You can go back to your parents.
Reading that, yes, God does have a special place for each one of you. And if you go and see Stephanie after church, she has a little something for you. So go and go back to your parents.
Thank you for reading that story for us. And I see I'm starting to run out of time, so I'm going to try to get this wrapped up fairly soon. Shepherds, they were the first to welcome Jesus to this earth. But they were not the only ones who realized the significance of the occasion. Matthew 2 tells us that the wise men from the east came to worship him. And last Sunday, Dan had a very good devotions on that. I really enjoyed it, so I don't want to get into that too much again. But I just find it interesting, you know, who are these people from the east? Likely it was from Babylon or Persia, somewhere in that area. And, you know, we don't know who they were or who inspired them. But I like to think that maybe they were inspired by Daniel, who was, according to Daniel chapter 2, the chief of the wise men from that area. And maybe he had passed down prophecies to them that they were searching. I don't know why they were searching, but they were searching. And we know that they came to Jerusalem to find this king. They knew he was born in Israel somewhere. They didn't know quite where, but they knew, they had to know. He was born, maybe not to a Jew, but it was somewhere in the Israel area. You know, the wise men asked Herod, and Herod didn't know, but Herod knew people that would know. And he went to the religious leaders, and they told him, they said, well, he's going to be born in Bethlehem. And what we don't see here is the religious leaders flocking to Bethlehem to worship. And I've wondered why. The wise men went, but the ones who knew and had been waiting for his birth and knew where he would be found, we don't see them going. But the wise men, on the other hand, they sought out the baby. They brought him gifts of meaning and they worshiped him. And that's kind of where the story takes a bit of a dark turn. Herod sought out all the babies born in the last 2 years to have them killed. And again, Jesus, the one who was there at creation, he was suddenly in danger of his life, and he was totally helpless to stop it. All hope rested on him, on his earthly father, following the angel's command to get out of there. But in doing so, he fulfilled another prophecy from Hosea saying, out of Egypt have I called my son. And the birth account in Matthew in particular is littered with prophecies from the Old Testament. You know, everyone, especially the religious leaders of the day, should have been able to put the pieces together when Jesus' ministry began 30 years later. And you know, there were some that did, but most that missed it. Most of them were too caught up in their own little world to figure it out, even though it was had to be one of the biggest topics of the day. You know, this is a very busy time of the year, and we often bring it on ourselves with planning lots of activities and travel. And sometimes we forget to appreciate the meaning of Christmas. We forget to appreciate what this season is all about. And my challenge today is, are we seeking? Do we see Jesus in every part of our life? Or do we miss all the signs, and even though they're obvious, but we're just too busy to notice? And I speak to myself on that, because there's a lot of things we're trying to tie up, year-end projects at the shop right now. We just had the Night of Light, and we're planning a trip, and all these things. You want to make Christmas cookies for the neighbors. You want to do this, you want to do that. Some of them are good things, some of them are just part of life. But do we forget to celebrate the birth of Christ in this time? And I do have one more group singing a song for us today. This group was the group that was at the manger during the Night of Light. And I've had a number of people tell me that the most meaningful experience for them at the Night of Light was the manger scene. And they sing a beautiful song there, and I've asked them to sing that for us today. And so we're gonna do that as our closing prayer, and then after that I'll get up and we'll have testimony. So if that group wants to come up here right now, they're welcome to come up and sing that for us, and then right after that I'll open up for any testimonies. So come on up.
Feel like this is maybe seeing kind of you know, when you have a campfire and you have campfire food, the campfire food tastes good, but if you eat it in a formal setting, it's not quite the same. I feel like maybe this song is kind of like that, because it was an informal setting we sang this in, but we're gonna do it for you, and we have a few missing as well, but we can get it.
The world waits for a miracle. The heart longs for a little bit of hope. Oh come, Emmanuel. A child prays for peace on earth, and she's calling out from a sea of hurt. Oh come, Emmanuel. And can you hear the angels singing, glory to the light of the world, glory, the light of the world is here.
The drought breaks with the tears of baby's cry is the sound of love. Come down, Emmanuel.
He is a song for the suffering. He is Messiah, the Prince of Peace has come. He has come, Emmanuel.
For a little bit of hope, oh come,